The Story of the Last Days and Burial of Reverend J. Hudson Taylor. Picking up on Chapter 2, Part 2, page 26. Of the 2 days that followed, how can I write? They were so calm and peaceful, so full of interest and encouragement, so rich in love and sympathy and the tender care that surrounded our dear one, that our hearts overflow on every remembrance of the Lord's great goodness up to the very end. Friday, June the 2nd, was a quiet, restful day. It rained all the morning and we could not go out. After lunch, chairs were set for, and we visited the T-I-E-N, Sin, K-O-H, a lofty building in the highest part of the city wall. Father was delighted with the wonderful view it afforded on the great metropolis and its surroundings, mountains, plains, and river. He climbed to the top of the third story without being overly tired. After that, he went to see the site for the new hospital, several acres of land in a capital situation, that the governor hopes to give for the work of our medical mission. The next day was Saturday, the 3rd of June. Dear Father did not come down to breakfast, but was dressed and reading when we carried up his tray. He was to speak to the Chinese friends that morning. So as soon as the usual daily service was concluded, he went into the chapel where they were all assembled and said a few words. They were deeply interested in seeing him, and his words went right to their hearts. Mr. Lee, the evangelist, responded, saying that many of them had been reading a retrospect and expressing the love and joy with which they welcomed him to CHANG-SHA, and the meeting was concluded with prayer. Afterwards, Father spent the morning quietly in his room. All the days at CHANG-SHA were cloudy and cool compared with the weather we had been having at Hankow, but he was feeling weary, how much so we gathered from one little sentence he let fall. Someone asked him that last day how long we had been in CHANG-SHA. I answered 3 days, and he said in the same moment and quietly, 2 nights. I did not understand at first and replied, "You mean 3 days, don't you, dear father?" "No," he said gently, "I mean 2 nights. I count the time by nights now." Father came down to dinner in the middle of the day, but did not eat much. Afterwards, we were packing and preparing to send all our luggage down to the steamer, and we were to sail at dawn on Monday, and had arranged to walk down to the riverside on Sunday evening. After dinner, I went over to see the German sisters outside the south gate, and on returning, found dear father lying on the long chair in his own room reading. It was then almost time for the reception Dr. and Mrs. Keller had planned to give all the missionaries in the city an opportunity of meeting him. He looked so fresh and nice when he came down at 4 o'clock to greet the friends who were gathering instead of waiting until 5 or after, as has been suggested. One by one they came and sat beside him, devoted workers representing 6 or 7 different societies, over 30 in all, including our own CIM friends. It was cool and pleasant in the little garden on which the sitting room opened, and tea was served out there on the green lawn surrounded by trees and gardens. Father went out and sat in the midst of the guests for an hour or more, evidently enjoying the quiet, happy time and interested in the photographs that were being taken. After all had left, Howard persuaded him to go upstairs to rest, but Father did not seem ready then to lie down, and said he was not specially tired. He seemed, if anything, a little restless, and went up and downstairs once or twice before tea time came. We were sending off our things then to the steamer, and then perhaps partly, and that perhaps partly unsettled him. When the evening meal was ready, about 7 o'clock, he did not feel inclined to come down. So Howard made him comfortable in the long chair in his room, and he said he would take something to eat a little later. In less than an hour, we returned and found him undressing. Howard went into the room to help him comfortably into bed, and while waiting to give him his supper, I spent a few minutes alone on the little platform over the roof, which is such a pleasant feature of many CHANG-SHA houses. Twilight had fallen then, and darkness veiled the distant mountains and river. Here and there, a few glimmering lights dotted the vast expanse of gray-roofed city. All was silent under the starlit sky. Enjoying the cool and quietness, I stood alone a while thinking of Father. But oh, how little one realized what was happening even then, or dreamed that in less than one half hour, our loved one would be with the Lord. Was the Golden Gate already springing back on its hinges? Were the host of welcoming angels gathering to receive his spirit? Had the Master himself arisen to greet his faithful friend and servant? What was happening? Oh, what was happening? He ran over the sleeping city, knowing nothing. Realizing nothing, I went down after a few minutes, and as the door was still shut, waited in the next room for Howard to call me. Then, he soon did, and I went in through the veranda. Dear Father was in bed, the lamp burning on the chair beside him, and he was leaning over it with his pocketbook lying open, and the letters it contained spread out as he'd love to have them. Amy's letter was in his hand, and he was reading it as I came in. We drew the pillow up under his head and made him comfortable, and then I sat down on a low chair beside the bed to give him his supper. Howard said brightly, "And now what can I do?" Fearing that Father would not want to eat much, I said, "Could you not read something interesting while Father has his tea?" This was a way we often had of helping him to eat when he was tired. He took up the book Father had been reading in the morning and said, "Where did you leave off?" Father pointed out the place and seemed pleased. It is interesting to remember this now, for it shows how clear his mind was not 5 minutes before the end. Before sitting down to read, Howard went to the dining room to bring some vinegar that had been forgotten. And while he was out of the room, I sat talking and turning the pages of the missionary review that Father had been looking over. His book of Psalms was also lying on the chair beside him. I was just in the middle of a sentence when dear Father turned his head quickly on the pillow and gave a little gasp as if he were about to sneeze. I looked up, but for a moment thought nothing of it. Then another case, then another. He gave no cry and said no word. He was not choking or distressed for breath. He did not look at me or seem conscious of anything. I ran to the door and called Howard, who was just at the foot of the stairs. He came at once, but before he reached the bedside, it was clear that the end had almost come. Father was quite unconscious then and breathing heavily. I ran back and called Dr. Keller, who was close at hand. In less time than it takes to write it, he was with us, but only just to see dear Father pass away. They tried artificial respiration, but it was of no avail. He was not, for God took him. From the moment of that first quick breath until all was over, cannot have been more than 3 or 4 minutes. And oh, the look of rest and calm that came over his face was wonderful. The weariness of years faded away in a few moments, and the very room seemed full of unutterable peace. Absent from the body, present with the Lord, I will come again and receive you into myself with Christ, which is far better. From CHANG-SHA, in the heart of China, inland China, gloriously translated, in abundant entrance, ministered into the everlasting kingdom of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Almost could one hear the royal welcome. "Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord." Tenderly we laid him down, too surprised and thankful to realize for the moment our great loss. There was nothing more to be done. The precious service of months was ended. Mr. Li, that's L.I., and other Chinese friends went out to make needful arrangements. But we could hardly bring ourselves to leave that quiet room. All the house was still, hallowed by a serenity and sweetness that scarcely seemed of earth. Though he was gone, a wonderful love and tenderness seemed still to draw us to his side. Sitting there, towards midnight, one wrote, "So peacefully, dear father lies sleeping. It does rest one to look and look again at that dear face. He just seems folded in the arms of him who giveth his beloved sleep. Oh, it is such a comfort to see him so utterly rested. Dear, dear father, all the weariness over, all the journeying ended. Safe home at last. His face so beautiful and looks 20 years younger. The weary lines are all gone. His eyes are closed so peacefully, just like a tired child asleep." One by one, or in little groups, the friends who were in the house and the dear native Christians gathered round his bed. All were so impressed with the calm, peaceful look that lingered on his face. And many touching things were said, showing how even in 3 short days the sweet simplicity of his life had won their hearts. "Oh, Simu," whispered one dear woman as she was going out, "thousands and ten thousands of angels have received and welcomed him." And in a flash, one almost seemed to see it. Last of all, a dear young evangelist, with his wife, a bride of only 18 years of age, came up. They had traveled in from an outstation that morning, on purpose to meet us all, and especially dear father, whose life they had been reading. They arrived in the middle of the afternoon while tea was going on, and did not like to ask to see him while so many guests were in the house. After that, father was tired, and they put it off till morning, knowing that we were to spend Sunday with them all. And then suddenly they heard the unexpected tidings of his departure to be with the Lord. Full of sorrow and disappointment, they sent word in to ask if they might come and look upon his face. Of course, we welcomed them and told them all that had happened and how grieved we were that they had not seen him earlier in the day. They came in together and stood beside him for a few moments in silence. Then the man said gently, "Do you think that I might touch his hand?" Then he bent over him, and taking one of dear father's hands in both his own, pressed it and stroked it tenderly. And to our great surprise, began to talk to him just as if he could hear. He seemed to forget us and everything about him in the overflow of a great heart longing just to reach him somehow and make him feel his love and reverence. He said so tenderly, "Dear and venerated pastor, we truly love you. We have come today to see you. We long to look into your face. We are your little children. You opened the road for us to heaven. You loved us and prayed for us long years. We came today to look upon your face. You look so happy, so peaceful. You are smiling. Your face is quiet and pleased. You cannot speak to us tonight. We do not want to bring you back, but we will follow you. We shall come to you." LAOMUH-SI. "You will welcome us by and by." And all the while he held his hand, bending over him and stroking it so tenderly, his young wife standing by. How sweet it seemed, how suitable. And last of all, the provinces to welcome the messengers of Christ. HU-NAN will not be behind the rest in loving devotion. Meanwhile, downstairs, a touching scene was taking place. Mr. Li and others who had been out to make all arrangements returned bringing a coffin and bearers and everything necessary for the last journey. They had hoped that they first heard of dear father's home call, that he would be buried in HU-NAN, and had rejoiced to think of keeping him in this way among them still. But when it was explained that we must leave that night for CHINKIANG, for he had every wish to be laid there if he should die in China, they saw at once the suitability of the arrangement and did all in their power to forward it. When everything had been brought to the house, they sent word to my husband, asking if they might speak with him. He went at once and was touched with so many evidences of their kind thought and care. Then, gathering round him 10 or 12 Christian men, they said they had wished to obtain a more beautiful coffin, but had been obliged to be satisfied with the best they could find ready-made, and that he need not ask the price, for it was their gift. They wished to do everything that night for dear father at their own expense, and they would take no denying, say what he would. Howard could not persuade them. No, the Lord had brought father to CHANG-SHA, and had permitted them to look upon his face. From their midst he had been translated to glory. HU-NAN, Christians had been the last to hear his voice and to receive his blessing. Theirs must be the privilege of providing for his last needs. Yes, it was beautiful and right. It meant a large sum to them, and they would feel it. But gladly we stood aside and let them do as they would. So HU-NAN, Hands prepared his last resting place. HU-NAN, Hearts planned all with loving care. One little company of the great multitude his life had blessed. Not in vain, not in vain, the faith and toil and suffering, the ceaseless prayers and sacrifice of 50 years. Inland China, opened everywhere to the gospel, proclaims the faithfulness of God, and here tonight, these strong HU-NAN men, with hearts as tender as children's, these women with tear-dimmed eyes, hoping in the last ministry of love, attest the people's gratitude. In the chapel, forms were laid aside, and the coffin they had prepared was placed in the midst. Very handsome it looked when we came in to see it, the massive woodwork richly colored in dark red and black and varnished perfectly. A number of women were there, including one dear old lady, L-O, and then T-A-I-T-A-I, who had discovered the day before that she was the same age as father, 73. This had given her great pleasure, and his unexpected departure seemed specially to speak to her heart. We could not persuade her to go home, though she was far from strong, and we feared the sleepless night would be too much for her. No, she said, let me stay. I want to song the Leo MUH-SI. I want to accompany him all the way down to the river. This we could not consent to. It was far too long a walk. But she stayed until we left the house and comforted us not a little by her loving sympathy. It was a scene never to be forgotten, the strong men moving quietly in the night of several lanterns, lining the coffin with white muslin, half-filling it with packets of lime wrapped in soft paper, laying in a new wattled quilt covered in pale blue calico, arranging a pillow for his head, and all with such gentle, loving tenderness, the women looking on. Very solemn and precious were the quiet times we had together as the night wore on. Dear Dr. and Mrs. Keller, Dr. B-A-R-R-I-E and Ms. Pollock, our hearts were knit with their love, with theirs in love and sympathy that cannot be told. Together we remembered every detail of the goodness and mercy that compassed dear Father up to the very close, and prayed for ourselves and all our fellow workers throughout China that grace might be given us to follow in his footsteps and imitate his faith, remembering that Jesus Christ is the same for us as for him, yesterday and today, yea, and forever. Towards morning, when all was in readiness, we gathered in the chapel once more with the dear native Christians to commend one another to the Lord in prayer, and the men accompanied us down to the boat. The steamer by which we had come was waiting on its return journey, and Captain Hunter was ready to sail before daylight. We were still the only passengers and occupied the same rooms and sat at the same table. But oh, how great a change the little while had made. In daylight, the passengers chosen for the morning and evening of that memorable day just ended, where watch, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. And in the beautiful Moravian text book, the verses for the new day on which we had entered our first day without him were, "Thine eyes shall see the King in his beauty. They shall behold the Lamb that is very far off. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth at the right hand of God. Set your affections on things above, not on things on the earth." On Monday morning, early, we reached Ankau and transferred our precious burden to the Kakwu, a downriver steamer. Never can we forget the kindness lavished upon us that day for dear father's sake and all the love and veneration shown to his memory. There and at various points down the river, friends came on board, bringing beautiful flowers until the coffin was quite hidden in white blossoms and greenery. Mr. Orr Ewing joined the steamer at KIU-KIANG, and Mr. C.T. Fish at WU-HU. And when we came to Chin-KIANG on Wednesday, the 7th of June, with our flag half-mast high, we found dear Mr. Stevenson from Shanghai waiting to meet us. In the mission house, halfway up the hill, a quiet room had been prepared and filled with flowers. There we laid him in the summer sunshine, and there, during the days that followed, many a prayer went up and many a thanksgiving from hearts his love had often comforted, his life inspired. On Thursday evening, a precious meeting was held in the mission house, at which over 30 of our own workers were present. Mr. D.E. Hoste, that's H-O-S-T-E, dear father's successor as general director of the mission, had arrived from Shanghai, and both he and Mr. Stevenson, our long-valued deputy director in China, told most beautifully of their impressions of his life and character. Others, including Miss Murray, Mr. Orr Ewing, and our dear brother Herbert Taylor, spoke of the blessing he had been to them in many ways, each testimony calling forth fresh thanksgiving to God. The funeral was arranged for 7 o'clock on Friday morning, and in the cool and quiet of that early hour, we set out on foot, a long procession, following the bearers to the English cemetery at the foot of the green hills near the river. Of the service conducted by dear Mr. Hoist and the address in Chinese given by Mr. Saunders, I must not attempt to tell you fully. All was just as Father would have wished it, little said about himself, but much about his master. It hardly seemed like a funeral at all. There was so little that spoke of death. It was just a quiet, loving farewell, until he come, tender and peaceful, full of thankfulness and hope. And then, as the grave was being filled in, the Chinese Christians gathered round. Among them, many of the older girls brought by Miss Robinson from the American School on the Hill. Softly and sweetly they began to sing, and as hymn followed hymn, words and music coming right from their hearts, one could not but feel how dear Father would have loved it, how glad he would have been to have them near him to the last. The simplest and tenderness of it all, the sweetness of the singing, the comfort of the hymns they chose, the quiet beauty of the scene, deeply moved one's heart. It was all so touching and appropriate, just what he would have desired. A truly fitting close to a life poured out for China, a life of such simplicity and love. Much remains that might be told concerning the memorial services held in Shanghai and elsewhere, and loving tributes that have reached us from many representatives of other societies, as well as through the press. But this letter is too long already. We know that you will continue in earnest prayer for Mr. Hoist, upon whom so much responsibility rests, and for us all, that we may be drawn nearer to one another in love, and may rest in the unchanging care of the everlasting Father, of whose faithfulness to those who put their trust in him, the life and death of our beloved one, are so signal a proof. Yours, dear Mr. Howard, in warm affection, M. Geraldine Taylor, P.S., in a letter just received from CHEN-CHAU, Mrs. Talbot says, Mr. Wang, W-A-N-G, the evangelist, is enclosing a few lines of sympathy from the church. We found a dear man on his knees weeping in prayer for you yesterday, and at a little memorial service, many with heart-moving sobs spoke of the blessing received during your dear father's recent visit. End of chapter 2, part 2, being read by Peter John Parisi, also known as Brian Dean.